Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRue Show for Saturday, May 16th, 2010. This is Marcia Mary Baker, and today we have guests who will be discussing the situation in the battle, in other words, a battle update on the fight in the United States to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act principle from 1933 to make it real now. This is more than a live debate. It's hand-to-hand combat here with the enemy of the United States and of the nation-state system. There is an amendment in the Senate right now. It's number 3884 that would do this, reinstate Glass-Steagall back into U.S. banking and financial law. It was removed in 1999. And we're going to get to the particulars, the principle, the strategy, the state of the mobilization in a very few minutes. I want to welcome here in the studio with me Paul Gallagher. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Marcia. Glad to be here.
Who many of you know from hosting this, from economics, and he's also been night and day on this kind of thing, the politics of it. You know, we're right near Washington, D.C., and we'll get into that. But I also want to welcome on the West Coast in San Francisco Bay Area, Summer Shields. Welcome, Summer.
Thank you, Marcia. Hello.
Who you know is running for office to destroy Nancy Pelosi and company, who are working overtime against the United States. He's running for Congress. He can say a lot more about this himself, but especially he is part of a national candidacy, in a sense, a slate of three. Keisha Rogers, who's candidate in Texas in the Houston area for Congress, and Rachel Brown up in Boston, and we'll hear more about this. But let me just say this, that I hope all of you made sure last week on May 8th to see the live international webcast by Linda LaRouche, namely The Greatest Crisis in Modern History. If you didn't look at it now or look at it the second or third time, because in that international webcast, LaRouche lays out the high stakes of what's involved in taking action to change the course in the United States, what we as citizens ought to be doing. And he's been reiterating that since then, since certain things have developed in the Senate in Washington, by saying that civilization itself is at stake. Now, the particulars, sometimes we speak conceptually. I just want to give a few particulars and then turn it over to our guests. The particulars are the following: that there is this kind of phony baloney operation going on in Congress, led by Senator Dodd, daughter or Dodd from Connecticut, who's actually going out of office in a few months.
The
And
artful Dodd for
oh, the
readers
artful.
of Dickens.
Or otherwise, he's called Senator Dudd.
Yeah.
He is managing, as they say, a phony baloney bill called I think it's called Restoring American Financial Stability Act of 2010, or something like that. It's been under discussion in the Senate all week. There are over 100, maybe 150 amendments that have been proposed to it. But in the midst of this, an amendment was filed May 6th of genuine principle and great strategic importance internationally. It was filed May 6th by John McCain, the Republican, of course, by Maria Cantwell, the Democrat from Washington, and it has others co-sponsors. And this was to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act, which was put out of operation officially in 1999. Now, what's happened particularly is in the midst of this past week-long debate and blah blah, but Paul Gallagher can fill us in more on that. On May 13th, that was Thursday, Senator Dodd and Harry Reid said, the managers of all this, that the Glass-Steagall bill is on the short list for action of about 8 to 10. This could be changed. So while the Senate is recessed this weekend, Monday night they plan to resume roll call votes. They're not saying they're going to take this one Monday night. They might take it Tuesday. They might take it Wednesday. They might smother it. They might try and prevent any vote on it at all by doing different things. But the thing is, we this the passage of this can shift the direction strategically, as I said before. It's momentous and it can happen. This isn't pie in the sky. The amendment is there. The principal co-sponsors introduced it last December in 2009 as a freestanding bill, but now it's there in the form of an amendment. And last Wednesday, that was May 12th, Maria Cantwell, in an interview she gave to a public broadcasting program called Bonnie Irby's To the Contrary, said, what really all this depends on is public outcry. Well, we've got that, I'm sure, and that's why our guests are here to discuss it, and that's why we want to have an update. We want everyone listening to go like crazy. I'll give the number many times, but you can go on the website, you know, but call Congress, do it now, and put it on their answering machine. It's area code 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. Give resources, money, and so forth like crazy. I can repeat otherwise. You can always subscribe to EIR online for many years in advance. Thank you. But now I want to turn in this order. We're going to have a mobilization update by summer. But just before that, as an introduction to that, I want Paul Gallagher, who's been working on this constantly, to stress some points, and also the international breakdown phase in which we're in, which is changing by the minute. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, in order to get at this the best way, I'd like to start by reading a statement that was made last night by Lyndon LaRouche on this. This is the quote. Senators Cantwell and McCain have shown what it means to be a true patriot at a time of grave crisis. I know something about why they have taken up this responsibility at this time. They deserve our total support. The Cantwell-McCain-Glass-Steagall Amendment is the true test of patriotism at this moment. Whether you realize it fully or not, trust me, the very survival of the United States is on the line in this vote. And if the United States goes down in a hyperinflationary collapse due to a failure to stand up against the British, then all of the planet is doomed. That is no exaggeration. That's the end of the quote of what LaRouche said last night. Now, Lyndon LaRouche very rarely commits himself so totally and with such a total mobilization to a single legislative action, even one which he's designed himself. And yet, because he knows that more is required, he knows that more is always, a new international credit system is required, a reorganization of the exchange rate, the floating exchange rate casino nationally, internationally, into a fixed exchange rate system so that credit can be pumped into infrastructure all over the world. That he knows that that's required. So it's very rare that he says that now and here and in this country over this weekend and the first couple of days of next week, everything depends on a piece of legislation, an amendment no less, to other legislation, and that it's got to be passed. So you really have to follow LaRouche in this as to why, at the moment, this is an absolutely essential first step which makes survival possible. And you have to look at what happened over the last 2 weeks, in particular, with the so-called Euro crisis. Remember that already a year ago, LaRouche said that sovereign debt was going to propel the next phase of the collapse, which he identified as beginning in July of 2007. And he made an extraordinary expose of the British banks' connection into Spanish banks and into Brazil, approximately 3 months ago, and into the attempt to set up this BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China, as a bloc excluding the United States from action on the international economic situation. Now, in that context, what the British have recently tried to do was to unleash on Europe, in a situation where Europe already, as a result of this crisis and its lack of infrastructure, its lack of nuclear, its anti-nuclear, its anti-high-speed rail, and so forth, anti-investment, Maastricht Treaty, that Europe was going down, and that the British made a move to impose the most absolutely dreadful austerity across Europe, austerity that would make Draco of draconian austerity blush by the number of people who are going to be killed by this. But it didn't turn out the way the British intended. Instead, it turned into a full-blown crisis of the euro, which is there, the British imposition of an economic straitjacket on Europe as a whole for the last 10 years or so, is that euro system. And the euro system, instead, the British find to their surprise that the euro system is blowing up, and that it's not long for this world. This is a full-blown crisis of the euro and the Maastricht Treaty and the Lisbon Treaty itself. But from our standpoint, the United States standpoint, and also the other major nations waiting and to a greater extent potentially recovering from this collapse, China and India in particular, from our standpoint, we have to break ourselves out of this incredible hyperinflationary collapse scenario, which was launched by the finance ministers of the 27 European countries last week. This $1 trillion bailout of a completely non-workable bailout of a completely non-workable euro and a completely non-workable system. This is going straight down into a complete collapse economically and into hyperinflation monetarily. We have to break ourselves out of that with a sharp measure from the United States side, which opens up the immediate possibility for matching measures among Russia, China, and India in order to freeze all of this trillions and trillions and trillions of junk, which they continuously keep bailing out with trillions of government dollars, to freeze all this, set it aside so that we can actually invest and recover. And Glass-Steagall, as you mentioned, this was freestanding legislation back in December, also in response to this same sudden plunge, deterioration of the global financial crisis. Also in response to that, Cantwell and McCain decided that this couldn't wait for their legislation to be gotten to on the airy agenda of Mr. Obama, you know, who's going to climate change next and so on and so forth, and that instead they had to attach it to this this dodgy Dodd bill, and they had to get it enacted, and then action will have to be taken to enforce what Glass-Steagall means, what it provides, and we will see the immediate end of bailouts, reversal of bailouts in the United States, and the potential then for the kind of agreement with Russia and China and India and other countries for fixed exchange rates and for large infrastructure investments, which can get us out of this. But we have to make that, we, the United States, must make that first step in LaRouche's view, or we go down with this horrifying conflagration which was set in Europe a week ago by the $1 trillion bailout. I say $1 trillion because that's what they've pledged so far. I mean, with the European, the ECB, the European Central Bank involved, it's multiple trillions by the next time we look. And on top of the massive bailouts which caused this crisis of their currencies to begin with, the bailouts of 2009, this is the end. Unless, I mean, Europe can be saved from this perhaps, but the first step is, as LaRouche is insisting, is that the United States has to wrench itself out of this multi-trillion dollar bailout mode and freeze this stuff, and then make the arrangements for credits for infrastructure and deals with China and Russia and India that can pull the world out of it. Nothing of that will happen unless the Glass-Steagall principle is involved and the United States is pulled out. As you know already, the Federal Reserve is deep into this trillion-dollar, multi-trillion-dollar European
Right, I think it
bailout.
was last Sunday night they issued their statement. They're going to give unlimited backup because they say it's risk-free to the European
That's
Central
right.
Bank and four other Bank of England, Switzerland, so forth.
With which the European Central Bank is going to buy absolutely anything with a junk rating or better that's out there all over the European banking system, and they're going to do it with currency swaps and other aid from the Federal Reserve. This has got to be stopped immediately before it goes any further. This is why LaRouche says Glass-Steagall now, although he knows that more is required, this is required now.
Thank you, Paul. And if you go on summerforcongress.com, you see a photo of our guest, Summer Shields, the candidate. And I see your big headline, Summer, is The Fight Is On. So why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, well, I think what Paul said, putting this into the context, is the important thing to do, absolutely. We, in this campaign, we're taking it extremely seriously that we're so close to getting this kind of legislation in place, and that immediately, I think Mr. LaRouche said something to the extent that something of this magnitude would instantly bring down the international global financial system and British-based imperial system, as Paul was just touching on. And we've been going out to the crowded areas of San Francisco and getting out a leaflet en masse on top of the, not including the statement that you run into on the very front page of my website, which is saying that the fight is on, which is another call to get in contact with the senators inside of California. But we've been going out with four statements, two by myself, one entitled Implement the Glass-Steagall Amendment Now, and the other one entitled Why Goldman Sachs. And we've been getting those out
Must be a
periodically in
good
the
one.
financial district with big response. And then we have another one that is by Lyndon LaRouche himself called The Brutish Bastards Are At It Again. And then we have a final one, which is a call to the people of San Francisco to call Dianne Feinstein's office and Senator Barbara Boxer's office and tell them, demand from them that they implement that they support and fight for the Glass-Steagall Amendment and the re-implementation of the Glass-Steagall Bill as the only way to get the world out of a crisis that will lead to a new dark age, in fact. And so we've been in front of the Federal Reserve quite a bit, to the point that many people stopped grabbing the leaflet because they had already gotten it. And we had gone there about 3 days in a row, early in the morning. And many people who were coming up and saying that they had already contacted their senators. And let me also say that the Glass-Steagall legislation is extremely popular right now, even among people who work at the Federal Reserve in San Francisco. And we've gotten at least one young man who works there and is ready for a Glass-Steagall approach, and probably freaked out by the recent, I totally freaked out by the recent bailout of European banks now. And yesterday, we have this all on camera actually, but we went in to demand a meeting from both senators' offices. And I guess the other two campaigns, both Keisha Rogers and Rachel Brown, did something similar to my knowledge, and we spoke with Rachel's campaign yesterday, and they had no problem going in and speaking with the senators. We went there with seven people, and we demanded a meeting with Feinstein's office, and they denied us a meeting. And this is after we had been getting a number of people to call into the office and tell their senator to support the Glass-Steagall legislation. And we went to Barbara Boxer's office. I called beforehand to see about setting up a meeting, and they said, "Oh, well, we don't take walk-ins. We only take meetings that are scheduled beforehand." So we went there anyway, and we demanded a meeting at the door. And we ended up getting into a debate with this. There's like a little electronic box with the little camera on it, so they can watch you, but you can't see them, and then you've got the speaker coming out. But we demanded a meeting with them, and we got in a heated debate, a heated fight back and forth between the woman behind on the line. And what ended up happening is later that day, I got a call from the Barber Boxer's office, and I essentially told them that we had to go with Glass-Steagall, that if we don't do this, then the U.S. will be lost. It's a matter of life or death for the nation, and that the her constituents are in support of this. And they immediately forwarded that to Boxer herself on the Senate floor and also her economic advisor. And because we had created such a turmoil and a ferment in the population, we had had people calling in, and we had gone there ourselves and demanded a meeting, we were able to press the senators up to, this is by no means enough, but get them to respond directly to the citizens of California. And there's more to come. We've got a lot more to do. We're going to be going through the list of all elected, all registered voters in the 8th congressional district that we got here as a result of my running for office. And we'll be doing that into the weekend, going out to the population into the weekend, and organizing people to get engaged so that they can demand, and not just ask, but demand that their senators support this legislation as a life or death issue for the United States.
But Summer, is it not also unusual how conversant people around the country have become with this 70-year-old piece of legislation and what it did and what it would do again, so that there is, nationally, there seems to be massive support for it. Polls show as much as 80% support for it. What do you find out there?
It's quite interesting. Yeah, we have a number of people, and we got a lot of this on tape. We have a guy who's grabbing, first he sees us walking with the Glass-Steagall posters and shouting about Glass-Steagall. Then he walks past us, then he turns around, and he walks up, grabs the leaflet that we've got and says, you know, Glass-Steagall sounds really good right about now. He's a young guy. We've gotten that happening all over the place, people who are saying, yeah, I'm ready for Glass-Steagall. And it was interesting because we noticed a very big shift about a week and a half ago where people started recognizing Glass-Steagall. They just started, it's become more and more of a household name. And right now we're having a showing of the webcast in our of Lyndon LaRouche's webcast that he gave last Saturday in our office, and one of the ladies in there is a fashion designer. And she read about Glass-Steagall in the Vanity Fair publication recently.
I think that Marcia has an example of Lynn talking about Glass-Steagall 3 years ago, three plus years ago. And by really driving on this for that period of time since the world banking system went into collapse, as he had forecast in 07. By really driving at this, I think we've come to really have surrounded and somewhat dominating the discussion of what needs to be done, and all of these blogs and think tanks and Democratic and Republican groups of various kinds and publications, now even to the most public publications like Vanity Fair that Summer mentioned. You see it if you Google Glass-Steagall. On the web, you find whole lists of articles from EIR, from statements from LaRouche and so forth, which have really, over a period of time, caused the kind of slow explosion of literacy, of people really understanding what Glass-Steagall was, the most powerful of the anti-Wall Street measures of the Franklin Roosevelt administration.
Right, let me throw that in here because that is to say, what Lyndon LaRouche said, it was September 2007, the end of September. And recall that summer in July, he said, okay, this is it. This system is blowing apart. And he soon released domestic emergency measures known as the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. We can get to that over that August and September period. But on September 28th, LaRouche said, we're now at the point that in addition to the measures I prescribed since summer of 2007, we have to add another provision. And then he said, we now have a corruption of banks, of what once were legitimate banks, through the contamination with the market toxic waste, such that we cannot simply reorganize and protect banks in a simple way. We're going to have to, in a sense, look at each bank, determine what corresponds to a legitimate bank under Glass-Steagall standards, and take that part of the bank that corresponds with Glass-Steagall standards and put that under protection. So that's when he said, look at this principle, and has been going at it ever since. And Paul, you could either, I want two things in the course of the next, the rest of the time on the show we have. I think there's some lessons of history. That's when Lynn was stressing in 1933 when the act came about. What are some of the lessons we need to know? I'd like you to go into that. And otherwise then, let's go back of the last couple years and look at the scope of the organizing, the tremendous state and local support that we're now trying to reach almost within 20 hours of for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Pact. But back to 1933 in that period, what stands out, Paul?
Well, as I said, this I think was the most powerful blow against Wall Street that FDR struck. His administration gave us a whole series of crucial regulations which lasted for 60 years and made the economy capable of at least of stable growth if there was investment in technology and scientific progress and infrastructure. Kept that capability there for 60 years, kept the banking system from screwing it up over that period of time. And the key one was to go after not just banks, but Wall Street banks, at that time epitomized by J.P. Morgan, the J.P. Morgan Bank, which had gotten within its tentacles of securitization, not only the major corporations of the country and their debt, but also many of the towns and states and their debt. And in particular, the whole electrical industry had. Now, to give you an idea of the gravity of this at that time, in 1928, when the debt of Germany had collapsed for at least the second time, Germany had been through hyperinflation, its banking system was collapsing again. A very high-level conference was held of only the most right-wing bankers internationally to deal with this. The American representative whose name became associated with this conference and this plan was Charles H. Dawes. And the Dawes plan resulted, which played a role directly in bringing Hitler to power. Now Dawes, while he was acting as the chief of finances for the world, in effect, in this conference, was also the director of a bank in Chicago. And that bank subsequently was bailed out once by the Hoover administration, precisely because that bank had invested, it was a commercial bank, it had invested the deposits and assets of the bank in the speculations on the whole national electricity industry and its debt, speculations by the infamous Samuel Insull and the Morgan interests, who had securitized that debt and were building a huge pyramid of debt instead of letting electricity expand outside the immediate centers of the cities. And so the result was that Dawes' own bank was going under, was bailed out once. As Franklin Roosevelt was coming into office, Dawes was urgently calling his Treasury Secretary, asking if he could be bailed out again, demanding to be bailed out a second time, which FDR refused. And that was that Morgan kind of operation, where they were called trusts at that time, which had securitized everything in the world and built debt pyramids on top of it. That kind of operation by Glass-Steagall passed within months of, actually within less than 2 months of Roosevelt taking office. Those debt conglomerates were completely frozen out from the protected banking system, which was being brought back, reorganized and brought back into operation by Roosevelt under the bank holiday. The bank holiday would not have succeeded if they had not built this wall separating the Morgan-type investment, Wall Street investment banking, away from the banking sector, the depository banking sector that they were bringing back. And I mean, you only have to look at who securitized all this mortgage crap in the United States. Senator Levin and others have brought it out. It was not the lending banks and the servicing banks. It was the Wall Street investment banks. They securitized it all, sold it all over the world, derivatized it, so on and so forth. And who then bought it? The Federal Reserve bought it all, $1.3 trillion worth. The government bought it all from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, well over over $2 trillion worth. So we wound up buying it all in these bailouts, and that has all got to be reversed. And that is the impact of putting a Glass-Steagall standard between commercial depository banking and Wall Street investment banking and speculating, is that that whole bailout, which is still in the multi-trillions, is reversed. That's how it worked in 33 and subsequently, and that's how it will work if it's passed and enforced now.
Well, let me ask you something, Summer, because I think that what you implied too in this, you said you have a statement out on Goldman Sachs. I'm sorry, I forget the rest
Goldman
of it.
Sachs.
Why Goldman Sachs? That some of what you were alluding to about the public gut reaction, especially after a couple years of this, not to mention the last 10 days, that there's a reaction that these money bailouts, this unlimited bailouts are for these bums. It's perfectly obvious, even if you didn't think about it 4 or 5 years ago, right? You were still into money. Money is the economy.
Yeah.
That now
absolutely.
There's a public gut reaction that this stinks, this is impossible. And do you want to say more about that? There are many cases filed every day. There's a headline if people follow these things, about more investigations showing up the worst kind of practices.
Yeah, I there's not too much more I can think of to be said on that specifically, except for anecdotal things that are popping up.
Okay.
But I do think that at this point, the way things are going, that there is a mass revolt ferment definitely inside the population across political boundaries. And across the board, we're getting people who are ready to support a candidate and support a group of candidates and a national move that is saying things like Goldman Sachs. I mean, Goldman Sachs is one of the most saying, do you know why Goldman Sachs to a passerby in San Francisco is one of the greatest things to see the response on the face of people who hear that.
Well, by the way,
because they know.
Oh, that's great. I also hear there's a poll mentioned about polls. You know, if you get a poll that's framed right, you're going to get 80% of people saying they want to have Glass-Steagall. They
right.
they don't. They want to have shysters separated from honest local banking. And I understand there's a new ratio, Summer. It was either Rachel Brown's campaign, Keisha Rogers, I don't know. The ratio of the thumbs up to the raspberry. Is that true? Is it running like 3 to 1 or 4 to 1 or 5 to 1?
Yeah, at this point, anybody's talking about Glass-Steagall and the terrible practices of the banking industry, the investment banking industry. Actually, banks across the board at this point, we're getting a much higher ratio of thumbs up than anything else, and a higher recognition of Obama's role in this.
Okay.
He's not just. And this latest bailout is going to be, I think there's two things. One is the latest bailout is going to be used in our favor for having gone after Obama and exposed him for all this time, all these months. And secondly, the damned if you do and damned if you don't situation that Obama finds himself in, where if he rejects the Glass-Steagall, the population will revolt. And if he goes ahead with the legislation, then the population is going to revolt anyway at this point. And so if he goes ahead with the legislation, the response is going to be big against him, coming from the people who put him up to put the legislation in.
Oh, I see.
The population will still probably continue to revolt against him anyway because of what he represents.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I understand LaRouche was saying you got a lose-lose situation for him, and for namely for London, who's pulling the strings on the whole gang, trying to kill this, you know, smother this baby in the cradle. Do you want to say something about that, Paul? We've had information too that the British, the Foreign Office, the powers that be, in terms of the international imperial money operations, would see passage of Glass-Steagall as a hostile act. I mean, that's the case.
They certainly would, because it was, yeah, well, I mean, LaRouche personally has had reports from sources and people who've had discussions with British, I don't know if officials is the word, British
powers,
intelligentsia, and so forth. This would be regarded as very unfriendly from the British side if Glass-Steagall were rammed through now here, right now in the United States, and imposed against the whole investment banking casino internationally, because that it has been the means by which really London has become, in the last 20 years, as the Economist likes to brag, London has become again the global financial center of the world, the most powerful center of financial activities, and essentially, as they put it themselves, the British Empire has returned to power because of their domination of the international trade in securitization, in derivatives of all
also
kinds.
Also spot market commodities, right?
And
I mean, you're spot coal, spot the craziest
of
things.
Speculation in commodities, which is the basis for a part of this whole huge leveraged debt bubble. So were that to be taken down, I mean, they've already given themselves a problem by the fact that the euro, which was their straitjacket over European economic investment for the last 15 years. The euro is in deep trouble. The Germans may go back imminently to the mark, and similarly with France and other countries, which would free them from this straitjacket and make them capable of cooperating in a sovereign way with the greater powers that I was talking about before. In a recovery program. So they have a problem there already. They don't think that Obama has handled his assignments from them all that well. They did drag him into energetically pushing this latest so-called euro trillion dollar, multi-trillion dollar bailout, which he did.
He really did, didn't he?
They expect him to prevent the Cantwell-McCain amendment from getting onto that bill, from being attached to that bill and passing in the next few days. They absolutely don't want it. They want him to stop it. You can see, as you have and I have also been watching this debate on the bill in the Senate during the week, that a great deal of stalling is going on by the artful Dodd, because the most important amendments are being postponed and postponed and postponed, while obviously a great deal of arm twisting, bribing, and so forth is going on behind the scenes, and much less important amendments are being voted on, to the point where a number of senators Democrats are starting to revolt against this, because the amendments coming up are not the important amendments, and above all, not the Glass-Steagall amendment. And there's a great stall going on, while Obama and the White House try to kill this, Larry Summers and company try to kill this.
Right. And can I just ask either one of you, but Paul, you might know, but if this being passed, I understand from John Hofel, who was on a weekly roundup for the LaRouche Political Action Committee this week, that if you implement Glass-Steagall, naturally this is a new directionality. So you have to implement, you do different things.
Got to enforce it, yeah.
Yeah, but one thing is that in its most straightforward way, is it right that more or less an entity, a corporation, could decide over 12 months, is it going to be a commercial banking entity or is it going to be a house of speculation, right? And then, and is that right? Do you want to say anything more about how it works?
Well, that would take a year according to the legislation, but if you, it says within a year, no bank involved in securitization in the capital markets, in that sense, can be connected in any way with a commercial depository bank. No officer or nor can a commercial depository bank be connected with an insurance company, which has been the other, because of the huge size of these things, the other way, that no officer of one can be an officer of the other, that there can be no connection to to the AIG phenomenon of the, now, make this law, if it's immediately enforced in the process of the banks deciding one or the other, then those banks which have already put them, already by the Bush and Obama administration, been put in the catbird seat of being both, of being bank holding companies while having no deposits whatsoever and being pure 40-to-1 leverage speculators, Goldman Sachs, in other words, Morgan Stanley, which, or and in fact, GM's bank, GMAC, now called Ally Bank, these monsters, which call themselves bank holding companies, could be forced immediately to cease to be bank holding companies, bringing into play also the criminal investigations that are underway and the hearings and the New York State criminal investigations and so forth, force them immediately to cease being bank holding companies and lose the protection which Glass-Steagall has always provided, the FDIC and related protection, which is always provided for the commercial banks. That means they can't, that their bailouts have to be reversed. And these are, as we know, the AIG bailout, the Fannie, Freddie, these were the real huge, multi-hundreds of billions of dollars bailouts, which are still growing. They're not shrinking. None of that's being paid back. Those get reversed. And all that crap that they securitized, as LaRouche has kept emphasizing, gets thrown in a pile to stink for 20 or 30 years, the way Jesse Jones did in the 1930s at the RFC, just let it stink for 15, 20 years. And commercial banking can be used to mediate credit going into investment in infrastructure and in the real economy. If we don't do that fast, immediately, this second wave of the collapse, which began in 2007, will wipe away everything. You just look at out in California, where summer is, just look at Schwarzenegger's latest doomsday machines that he's setting off in terms of devastating. Already 40% of the California budget has disappeared. Now he's going to cut away another 15-20% of it. What is going to be left? That's not a governable state. And these, you know, that's the stage that's coming at us now, not only in Europe.
Right. So let me just point out here, I guess you mentioned California, and we're only maybe 6 weeks off from July 1st is the official new financial year for, I think, 48 states. So of course, and we've had 2 years, well, we had decline for many years, decades, but then we've had 2 years of impossible kind of cut faster than the collapse is occurring. Can you cut your government functions faster than your revenue is falling? So this is an upheaval situation. But let me just go back. Summer, you were involved in this too before your candidacy. If you go back to the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act campaign announced by LaRouche in late summer 2007, the scope of this was tremendous. I mean, the uptake, the number of cities, you can talk about Ohio, Kentucky, Massachusetts, you know, and elsewhere that passed it, hundreds and hundreds of state legislators supported it and so forth. We're trying to reach them all in the current 24-hour period to let them know about the Glass-Steagall Amendment and the timing of getting it passed. But Summer, where you were involved in all of this, right? And those networks Perhaps you have some reactivating in California.
Yes, actually, I was involved in the Midwest. I was in Detroit,
right,
and Missouri and so forth, where we got huge response. But we're reactivating the networks we did meet here in California and we spoke with to see. It was during that time, actually, and I'm very curious as to what kind of response we're getting on Capitol Hill. Paul, if you wanted to comment on this, but we put out this, or Mr. LaRouche initiated a video called Firewall, which we've now reposted. Before anybody had even heard of the term bailout ever, we put out this documentary warning of hyperinflation. And since then, several bailouts later, and an outcry from the population, this video was extremely prophetic. And we gave this to all of these different elected officials that we did the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act activities with. And we're getting back to them, and we're going to have to get back to them as soon as we can, either on Monday morning, or we're going to try and hunt them down at their houses, which is something that we'll invest some time in tonight, seeing if we can get their home phone numbers and call them up on an emergency basis to get them to support this move for Glass-Steagall. But I'm curious, Paul, I don't know if you have anything on this, but Firewall, is there anything reverberating on Capitol Hill from that?
From the Firewall video, I don't know. Definitely from what you're referencing more broadly, the whole mobilization that we've done since 2007 for what we called then the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which is when the Firewall video was done. And it was distributed on Capitol Hill then, and many people watched it. Senator Cantwell's judgment, which she gave on an interview on NPR on the Bonnie Erb show a couple of nights ago, was the, she gave it, and some of it was released, but it's going to actually play tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, on NPR. She believes that she has the votes, she and McCain have the votes to get this amendment passed if the Artful Dodd can be forced into letting it come up for debate and a vote. So that is the fruit of the whole 3 years of work with these people. Now it's important that around the people understand that around the country this weekend there are hundreds, maybe more than 1,000 elected officials at the local and state level who know very well what the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act was, that it was passed all over the country, and that if it had been adopted by the Congress, these bailouts wouldn't have occurred. And this, not to mention 4 million foreclosures a year for the last 2 years and this year, wouldn't be occurring. So those people are a tremendous army to get the members of the Senate, and then of course remember we have to get it passed in the House as well, on their version of the bill. They're a tremendous army to get this thing through, because they know that the principle of Glass-Steagall, which Lynn was discussing with the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, would have prevented this, and we have to do it now. Smart economists have used the image of a hurricane with the two walls around the eye, that in 2007 we were hit with one side, one wall, or of a hurricane of financial and economic collapse. We moved into the eye around the end of 2009, and many people looked around and said, oh, well, something's favorable is happening, right? We have now been in the process of moving into the other wall, which is the effects of governments all over the world having spent all their revenue bailing out their banks, and governments at every level having lost their revenue because of the collapse of economic activity from bailing out those banks. And now all the government debt is going bad, and all the government debt is just as securitized and derivativized as all the mortgage debt was. And so it's blowing up. It's continuing to blow up. We're now back in the worst of the hurricane again. And There are many, many elected officials around the country who understand this, and enough in the Senate with our mobilization, our pressure, that the votes are there to pass this.
Right. And maybe we could underscore that, Paul. I don't know if you want to say something about this on the enemy side. I mean, the attempt to there's another aspect of trying to prevent this, which is this fiscal austerity. I mean, there are the mechanisms, the wheels are turning, right, from the White House and so forth, on how to, since all the money's been sucked out of everywhere possible for the bailout, how to just get people to live less, die early. Do you want to say something about those wheels? I mean, they're, and even in the form of whether it's the carbon tax and trade and tell you to die early in the name of saving the planet, or whether it's some fiscal
we were at
excuse.
We were at an AFL-CIO event yesterday where the unions were introducing a film, interestingly enough, which is a complete expose of Penny Pritzker. And in the film, the AFL-CIO film, it's made quite clear repeatedly that she was Obama's money pocket when he was running for president and before, and is now one of his economic advisors, and that she and the Hyatt Hotel chain and so forth of her family are crooks. And at that, at the showing of that film, the head of the AFL-CIO, Mr. Trumka, said he feared that Obama was pivoting now to deficit reduction. Now, that's a very mild way of putting it. But if the strongest labor supporters of the White House are now fearing or acknowledging that they fear that what's coming is cuts in everything, not job creation, but cuts in everything economic around the country, then you can tell the intention of the White House with this deficit reduction commission and this move to set Congress aside entirely and have it simply rubber stamp the cuts of a kind of Big Mac, Felix Rowatton setup for the whole country. That's what we're facing. And again, it's ironic. Many people don't realize this. The reason for the sovereign debt crises all over the world is that all these countries put all their revenue into bailing out their banks. And now they can't pay their own debts, which have ballooned as a result of that and the collapse of their revenues. They can't pay that, and those debts have been made into a bubble by the same investment banks all over the world, you know, in London and UBS and so forth, as the previous toxic mortgage and related securities. People know that Goldman Sachs phonied up the Greek debt, which made the Greek crisis of its debt much worse when it happened, because Goldman Sachs had issued derivatives and essentially hid the amount and maturity of that debt from the public more than a year ago. Actually, this goes back to planning in the early part of this century. So that's now in the next year, we're going to see state cuts forced on states, worse even than the ones they've done so far.
Well, in the remaining minutes, I'd like Summer or Paul to raise any question or any bring up any comment that they mightn't have during the whole hour. But one thing that comes to mind is that this whole period of this monetizing and securitizing and create new opportunities to speculate and bilk people and using municipal debt and state debt and that's gone on. At the same time, of course, there has been a takedown, a drawdown of the condition of the physical economy around us all. I mean, whether it's Boston, which has no redundancy in its main water supply, 2 million people were out of water when something happened, or levees breaching or locks disintegrating on the Ohio, you'll have a gate fall off or something. So, but Summer, in California, you must see that, or people must sense that, or what expression do you see of the physical situation? Paul mentioned about gigantic Schwarzenegger cuts and axing going on, but what do you see about people's response to that or experience of that?
It's extremely ugly. Right now, just in the last couple of days of calls, we've gotten two people who are losing their houses. One guy who's going to call us senators, but he's about to move into his car. That was just yesterday. We lost our last auto plant in the state of California a couple of weeks ago. And actually, one of the places where we've had the biggest response to campaigning on behalf of these policies has been in that area where this NUMMI plant was just taken down.
The Toyota GM plant.
The Toyota GM plant, right. And that was the last, that was the very last thing we had here. The shutdown, the ongoing reverberation of the shutdown of the auto parts suppliers that were still functioning in California, despite the fact that we only had one auto plant left here. We still had a lot of industry associated with the car industry. Those have been lost. And people are, increasingly desperate. I saw a guy the other day at Walgreens, which is kind of a corner store, trying to use food stamps. And so it's just a situation where you're hearing the news regularly of the kids being cut off of education, out of education, out of health insurance for the state of California. And you get the reverberation of that some days later, where you see it break out in the form of a slight social upheaval. But definitely a recognition that now more than ever that the administration can't blame what they're doing on the former Bush administration. Mm-hmm. But it's happening right now, and Schwarzenegger's doing every last disgusting cut now under the Obama administration's watch, and with their enthusiastic support, in the words of these guys at the AFL-CIO meeting, by reducing the deficit.
Right. Let me ask you then further, bring up anything, but you mentioned many aspects and anecdotes and stories of the response in the street, the thumbs up or the this and the that. Could you differentiate out, is there a youth response especially, or young people, or underage, by young, I don't care, underage 35 or underage 20? Could you say something about that in all you're doing in California and in your own district, of course?
Yeah, there's a big response. We got a lot of young people that just don't have work anymore.
Yeah.
So their response is, I can't stand, it's kind of a bit of a I'm just really pissed off about everything that's happening to me. But the people who are organizable, they're people who invested a lot of belief in the current administration, and they're people who are excited. Just excited to see someone who is about their age group, and three people who are about their age group running in response to what they see as a potentially hopeless situation. A lot of people who are on their last leg, and these are college students. A lot of college students are leaving college, we found, and they're more responsive to political organizing now if they're approached in a way that they can recognize what it is you're talking about. But a lot of these policies, there was never any attempt to try and educate anybody on the campaign trail for the presidential election in any real way. So now we're playing the role that the presidential candidates should have played leading up to this crisis, educating people on how to get out of this thing. And people are responsive.
Right. I'm going to say again, because this is the phone number. Take it down. Many people listen by telephone message line. If not, catch the show on our web archives on LaRouchePub.com. It's area code 202-224-3121 is the main switchboard for Congress. You can call into the Senate in your home district or activate people to do so, or just call Washington 202-224-3121. And I do want you to get in touch with EIR, buy years ahead worth of EIR online, and Summer can speak for himself about the value of these congressional candidacies, his own and his fellow ones. What have you got? You're going to continue this like crazy, I guess, 28 hours a day for the next few days, right?
We're going all out. people should call their senators now, immediately, and tell them to support Glass-Steagall. It's effective. They're going to respond to the population being extremely upset right now, and we're going to escalate throughout the course of the next hours.
Thank you very much. This is May 15th. It's been the LaRue Show. I thank Paul Gallagher, Summer Shields, who's candidate for Congress in California. This is Marcia Mary Baker signing off. Stay tuned May 23rd.
Thanks a lot. Thanks,
May 22nd.